Let's turn back the clock to the year 1628 BCE. We're on the island of Crete. Suddenly the earth shakes. Over the horizon to the north, the island of Terra, or Santorini, explodes. The entire volcano collapses into the sea, producing a wall of water hundreds of meters high, which radiates outward. The wave approaches the northern coast of Crete, steepens, and crashes with a deafening roar, washing hundreds of meters above sea level. The turbulent backwash carries rocks, trees, and living creatures out to sea. Overnight, the Minoan civilization is destroyed. For the next 2 weeks, ash clouds from this eruption, the largest in recorded history, cover the earth. In China, the Shang Dynasty seizes control. The bamboo annals record a yellow fog, a dim sun, then three suns, and frost in July, and famine. This cataclysmic eruption marked a turning point in human history. Those civilizations which survived the Santorini eruption were forever changed. It was a time for taking stock. The new year arrives, another time for taking stock. But wait, what is all this talk about sin, repentance, forgiveness? Give us a break. We Unitarians are beyond all that, aren't we? Consider the following conversation. I've said I'm sorry. What else do you want? Okay, but this is the last time. Don't you ever do that again. Good grief, I apologize. Can't we just get on with life? Let's try a thought experiment. Suppose I have been deeply harmed by someone. Suppose I cling to my hostility and resentment for years or for decades. What is the payoff for me? Suppose I record my grievances in a ledger or on a DVD with graphic images. That process gives me enormous power over the other person. I can retrieve an incident from the past, and I can replay it on a big screen TV. I can invite all my friends and bring in snacks and popcorn and say, "Look what was done to me. See?" That's an enormous payoff. Another question. What if I am the one who has messed up? What is the payoff for me if I refuse to forgive myself? If I fixate on my flaws and become self-absorbed, when I refuse to forgive myself, I avoid responsibility for my emotional being and destiny. I can say, that's the way it is. That's the way I am. What else can I do? That keeps me from reclaiming the opportunity to chart a new direction. That is an enormous payoff. So, whether afflictions come from outside or might be of my own making, denying forgiveness has a huge payoff. I'm convinced that spiritual maturation requires coming to terms with the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, such as tsunamis, earthquakes, and eruptions, or with the human meanness and snarkiness that's all around us. The emotional landmines and tripwires that you and I traverse, they can do great damage. So, what are the choices? A note on the word sin, a word that sometimes causes me to cringe if I hear it from a TV preacher. Sin is big business. I know that. But I want to suggest a couple of other meanings of sin, which I think are congruent with our UU values. One meaning is missing the mark. For example, I am committed to loving and caring for my family, the congregation, my friends. But I fall short. Even so, I strive to offer insights and challenges here on Sunday morning, but sometimes I miss the mark. And this notion of missing the mark has some merit, but there's just one problem. What if my mark is harmful? What if my mark, my aiming point, is derisive, abusive, and harmful? Deeply felt causes can nonetheless be very damaging. A second meaning of the word sin is estrangement, brokenness. It's a disconnect between our authentic selves and the more idealized images that we project for others to see. Sin is that disconnect, that gap between internal and external. So if the word sin is problematic for you, substitute another connotation for those fragmenting, estranged, corrosive, alienating qualities of your relationships. Let me offer a threefold path toward forgiveness. And by the way, I'm speaking of forgiveness, not reconciliation. That's another animal. A bit about that in a moment. What does forgiveness mean? Step one is anger. Does that sound odd? But that is step one on the path toward forgiveness. Some wounds are so deep that they cry out to be heard. What are the wounds from long ago or from recently that cry out for healing? Question: when you were a kid, what were you told about anger? What did your parents teach you? When you felt wounded, when you were bullied, were you told to stifle your anger, bite your lip, pretend nothing was wrong? At the other extreme, were you taught to amplify your anger, to turn up the voltage, to try to get even? You know, anger is not supposed to happen to nice people. It does happen. And many of us were not taught appropriate ways to express anger. It's never too late. And so when I am caught up in anger, I have a couple of choices. I can rage and project blame on others, or I can take responsibility for my emotional being, maybe with statements to myself, something like this. One, I have experienced events that make me deeply angry because of the harm that has been done to me or to others. Despite these conditions, I shall stay grounded in who I am and who I know myself to be. I shall devote my time and energy to restoring those values which have been and remain my ethical gyroscopes. I am prepared to take the following steps in response to these events. And I might enumerate what steps I am prepared to take. I also am clear what I am not responsible for doing or am not capable of doing. I will set boundaries on what is and is not on my plate. I make no presumptions about others' interpretation of or respect for or agreement with my choices. But this is how I shall respond, grounded in my enduring values. Okay, I just made up those four statements, but it's about reclaiming what is mine and what is not mine to do amidst anger. And when those four statements or something else similar can be grounded in personal authenticity, and this I believe and these are my values, that kind of perception, then anger can be healing, as opposed to a smiling, happy face, a flabby theology, which is just bland and gets us nowhere. So the first step toward forgiveness is anger, appropriate anger. Step two is remembering. Remembering, literally reconnecting that which longs for wholeness. My deepest privilege as a minister is preparing and officiating at memorial services and funerals for congregation members, of course, and also for those who have no home. And each such remembering is like the first time starting over in my visits with him and in preparing a memorial. The same in the journey toward forgiveness. What is the purpose of remembering? Is it to wallow in nostalgia or grief? Not at all. Remembering is a benediction, a blessing. Benedictus, speaking well. Remembering is what lifts up and honors those who blessed my life. That's what our memorial services are so amazing for. Who has blessed me? Whose presence came about? Not through any arranging or deserving on my part. When did someone else open a doorway through which I could travel on in dignity, despite how I might have really messed up? Alternatively, when did I pronounce the happy couple as married and then inadvertently refer to them by the wrong names? Oh, that's a minister's worst nightmare. We have many nightmares. That's one of them. When did I really mess up and the others gracefully reassured me that I could go on in dignity? And memory thus plays a crucial role. We cannot undo the past any more than we can erase wounds that we have suffered or have inflicted. But through the power of memory, to think and feel and imagine our way back through time, we can at long last finish with the past in the sense of removing its power to hurt us. It's like pulling out the thorns, whether the thorns are self-inflicted or from others. It's a decision of the human heart that I'm going to take out those thorns and I'm going to quit hurting myself. Step three in forgiveness is letting go. Eva has already spoken well about letting go. Now, I don't mean forgetting painful truths, but I mean letting go two specific things. Letting go pride and letting go illusions. Pride and illusions. Let's say a little bit about pride. Letting go pride is to say to somebody, you know, you've done something that is unspeakably awful to me, and by all rights I should call it quits between us. Both my pride and my principles demand that I'm out of here. Nonetheless, I refuse to let those scars remain between us forever. I still want to be able to honor your dignity. Another thought experiment. Do any of you remember from childhood an ancient prayer which says, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us"? Some of you may remember that. A prayer originally spoken in Aramaic by a first century rabbi. And it's a prayer which I hope I live long enough to hear in our UU worship services someday. What do these spoken words mean? Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. You know, I used to think that since, of course, everything goes back to the Hebrew Bible, that maybe the tit-for-tat, 50-50 reciprocity was what was being spoken of. That is, that being forgiven is conditional upon our first forgiving others. It's kind of a tit-for-tat exchange. This for me, I do that for you. But now I don't think that's really what that prayer was about. Because if forgiveness depended on reciprocity, that's not forgiveness. That's fair warning. Don't you ever do that again. I believe that what the rabbi Yeshua was saying in that ancient Aramaic prayer was really about pride. That the pride which keeps us from forgiving others is the very same pride that keeps us from accepting forgiveness. again. The pride that keeps me from forgiving others is exactly the same pride that keeps me from accepting forgiveness and will God or somebody help me do something about it? That's what I think that ancient prayer is about. It's not about even exchange. It's about clinging to pride. There's a second component of letting go, and it's about letting go illusions. What sorts of illusions? Illusions that the world is supposed to be fair. Illusions that my job is to bring out a bulldozer and create a level playing field. Illusions of onward and upward progress that later will be better. Illusions of happy endings. Illusions of how our personal lives and vocations and relationships should work out. You know, the most profound wisdom book in the Hebrew Bible is Ecclesiastes, or Kohelet. That's also by far the most Unitarian book in the Hebrew Bible. If I were teaching a course on the Hebrew Bible, I would start with Ecclesiastes. The second book I would teach is Jonah, which is the most universalist book. What does Ecclesiastes say? Ecclesiastes, the old wisdom teacher, says the sun and the rain and the disasters fall upon all the good and the evil. It's not fair. Something has gone haywire with the promises that God made to us, saying that if we keep the covenant, we will be blessed and honored and a chosen people and all that. But it didn't work out that way. Thankfully, the compilers of the Hebrew Bible kept Kohelet in because he just thumbed his nose at the ancient wisdom which said, it's all going to work out. Kohelet said, it doesn't all work out. This world ain't fair. And so forgiveness requires this important third step of letting go pride, and letting go illusions. Just a quick word about reconciliation, something that's entirely different. Forgiveness is an internal process, but reconciliation does require some kind of reciprocity, acknowledgement, engagement with another party. Forgiveness, however, does not depend on any turnaround in external circumstances. I want to close where we began, on the north shore of Crete, in a little village of Kolnibari, where there's a Greek Orthodox monastery. Near this monastery is a small airstrip where in World War II the Nazi paratroopers were attacked by peasants wielding nothing but kitchen knives. Slaughter and retribution were all over the place. And near this monastery, there is a cemetery with a single cross marking the mass grave of the Cretan peasants. And in this place, there came to be an institute devoted to healing the wounds of war. This institute was created by Alexander Papaderos, a doctor of philosophy, a teacher and politician. At war's end, he came to believe that the Germans and the Cretans had much to give each other and to learn from each other. Papaderos, at one point in speaking to guests, he held up his hand and stilled the room. He took out from his pocket a small round mirror, a broken fragment from a German motorcycle which had been found along the side of the road. And Papaderos said, when I was a child, I raised this broken piece of mirror and I discovered I was able to reflect light into the deepest wells, into the darkest places. And I have carried that broken fragment of a mirror with me ever since. Friends, this is what forgiveness is. It has taken the broken fragments that can reflect light into the deepest places. May the legacy of Papaderos and his embodiment of forgiveness be ours as well.